Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. We are in chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarini. And in the last so many weeks, we have been going rather slowly in this chapter because as you take up every segment of this chapter, there are new terms, there are new insights that Bhagwan is giving us. And it is so important for us to understand these spiritual concepts because all the Vahinis are filled with the essence of the scriptures. And the slower we go, the deeper we go, and the clearer we are with these concepts, this is what will help us in our spiritual path. First, we have to understand. Then we have to assimilate and implement in our lives. So in this chapter 11, if you see, Bhagwan begins by telling us that each one of us is Satchitananda Swarupa. And this is same as the concept of Asti Bhati Priyam. What is Satchitananda is also called in our scriptures as Asti Bhati Priyam. Sat is that which does not change, the eternal principle, and that is what is Asti. Bhati is that which shines. Chit is that awareness that shines. Ananda is what gives you joy, and that is what is Priyam. In Asti Bhati Priyam. So Bhagwan exhorts us to believe that we are indeed Ananda Swarupas, we are indeed the eternal principles. But because of certain obstructions, because of certain pratibandhas, as it is called in Sanskrit, we have not been able to experience this. We have not been able to feel that we are this eternal principle. And Bhagwan goes on to explain how we have bhuta pratibandhas, which are past obstructions. There are present obstructions. There are future obstructions. And talking about the present obstructions, Bhagwan says there are four kinds of present obstructions. It happens because of our attachment to sense objects. It happens because of dullness of understanding. It happens because of cynical criticism. It happens because of absurd conceit. So these four are the reasons which prevent us from understanding and experiencing that we are that eternal principle ourselves. And Bhagwan gives us explanations about what is this attachment to sense objects, how to deal with this dullness of understanding, cynical criticism, how to get over absurd conceit, as well as Bhagwan goes on to talk about the obstructions of the future, and he tells us there are times when unknowingly we slip into acts that may seem to be good but actually are leading to attachments, and that's why are detrimental to our spiritual progress. And Swami says, this happens when you do things in the nature of compassion, but you don't realize that what you did as an act of compassion, because you didn't do it in the right spirit, it has also led to attachment. And the more you bind yourselves to the world, the more you are far from merging with the Lord. So we did spend some time talking about these kind of acts with examples. And in the third segment, Bhagwan talked about Sama, Dama, Uparati, Titiksha. These are the four ways by which you can reduce your attachment to sense objects and develop purity, self-control, withdrawal of desires, and develop that forbearance. Swami said how dullness of understanding can be removed by listening, by Shravanam, by listening again and again to satsangs, to sacred teachings. How constant listening will lead to cleansing within. And then in this last segment, 7.3, Bhagwan goes on to distinguish between what is vijnana and what is ajnana. And that's where Bhagwan talks about manas, chitta, buddhi, ahankara, and how we can lead a life that is pointed to external objects, or lead a life that takes us inside, and how we have to judiciously use these different roles that the mind plays, so that we go within. Everything is within. And then the devotee asks Swami, what is the difference between a jnani and an ajnani, the wise and the one who is not wise? And here Bhagwan gives a beautiful answer, and again a very powerful concept. So let's listen to segment 11.3, and then we will contemplate on what is it that Bhagwan has said, and try to understand this through his discourses, through the analogies and examples that he has given. So here is segment 11.3.
Swami, just like there is a way to overcome obstructions of the past, can we get over the obstructions of the present?
Why not? There is a way for this also. For every obstruction, there is certainly a way out through karma. There is no obstruction that cannot be surmounted. Attachment to sense objects can be removed by Sama, Dama, Uparati, Titiksha. That is, by developing purity, self-control, withdrawal of desires, and the ability to suffer. Dullness of understanding can be removed by listening again and again. Constant meditation on the things heard will abolish the habit of cynical criticism. All absurd conceit will vanish through living those teachings in one's life.
Swami, to master all this seems impossible for everyone. To make it easy for all, tell me, which is important?
My dear fellow, to know a thing is vijnana. To be ignorant of it is ajnana. Don't you know this?
So many people say so many things about this vijnana and this ajnana. What is the basis for the two?
Now you have come again to the very first step. Ajnana is the mental attitude that has reference to the external object, and vijnana is the mental attitude that has reference to the internal subject, that is Atma. Ajnana is known also as manas and chittam. When the activity and attitude turn inwards, they are called buddhi and ahankara.
Some say that the accumulated merit of the jnani is only to enable him to attain the higher world. Is this true?
Both the jnani and the ajnani will have desire, absence of desire, desire for the other world, and accumulated consequences of past actions, all in equal measure. their experiences also will be in equal measure. Only the jnani will not have the consciousness that he is the doer. So he will not be bound. The ajnani is conscious that he is the doer, and so he gets bound. This is the distinction. I have already told you, haven't I, that the mind is the cause of bondage as well as of liberation. The mind is the cause of everything.
Mind, mind, they keep on saying, what is it? What is its form?
The form of the mind is the thoughts. If you understand the origin of thoughts, then there will be no bondage at all.
What is that basis?
The basis is what you refer to as I. Seeking for the I, if you are in that I state, however many thoughts come and go, you will remain unaffected.
Right. That is very good, Swami. Please make all this soak into our brains so that we may realize the purpose of our lives. I shall take leave, Swami.
Do so. Leave gladly and return later. Take my blessings with you.
So that is what Bhagwan gives us in this last segment of chapter 11. And so interestingly, Swami says, both the jnani and the ajnani, both the people who are wise as well as those who are not wise, both of them will have desire, absence of desire, desire for the other world, accumulated consequences of past actions. Everyone goes through this. And Swami says their experiences also will be in equal measure. But what is the difference? And this is a very, very profound one. Swami says, the jnani, the wise, will not have the consciousness that he is the doer. And that is why he will not be bound. Whereas the ignorant one thinks that he is the doer. And as a result, he gets bound. And the reason for our bondage or liberation, Swami says, is the mind. Mano Moolam Idam Jagat, Swami used to always say. So the main moot point here is, the wise one knows that he is nothing. The ignorant one thinks that he is everything. In a beautiful summer course discourse in the year 1991, Swami tells the story of how once there was a war between the Devas and the Asuras, the demons and the gods, and the Devas came out victoriously. All the gods were victorious, and so they were celebrating their victory and congratulating themselves about their powers, their valor, their strategies, and how they were able to overcome the power of the demons. When this was going on, suddenly Brahma appeared in the scene. But he came in a disguised form. He came in the form of a yaksha, a celestial being. So when the fire god saw this yaksha, so the fire god came near him and now the yaksha asked the fire god, may I know who you are? And just that question itself was something that the fire god did not like. It was very insulting. He felt, I mean, he's asking, who am I? Everybody knows who am I. So he said, don't you know? Don't you know me? I am the god of fire, Agni Deva. I can reduce to ashes the entire world in a trice. You better know who I am. Oh, so the Yaksha said, oh, I'm sorry, I did not know. You are such a great hero. But can you do something for me? What is it that you want? And the Yaksha lifts a blade of grass and says, O God of fire, the valorous one who can burn anything to ashes, can you please burn this blade of grass? And the fire god says, of course. And he tries to burn the blade of grass, but to his utter shock, he's just not able to do. Despite all his efforts, he cannot believe that he's not able to do anything to that blade of grass. The god of fire is helpless in front of a silly grass. And next came the wind god. And the wind god saw that something is going on there. And he asked, Yaksha, who are you? Now the Yaksha said, yeah, I will tell you, but may I know who are you first? And again, the wind god, like the fire god, was enraged. And he said, don't you know of the cyclones and tornadoes and tidal waves? I can, with my unequaled might, devastate anything. So the Yaksha smiled and said, I know. You are so powerful. But I have a request. What is it? Can you please blow away this blade of grass? And the Yaksha smiled and said, what silly request is this? And he just says, okay. And he just tries to blow the blade of grass. But as expected, he, with all his might and Herculean effort, is not even able to shake, even by a millimeter, that blade of grass. So shocking for him to see that all his powers are nothing in front of that little strand of grass. And Indra, who was witnessing all this, the king of the gods, he himself came forward. He wanted to see, who is this Yaksha? He wanted to really examine. He felt something is not ordinary here. And when he came there to examine Yaksha, suddenly he saw that the Yaksha was not there. There was a woman standing there in the place of the Yaksha. And so he addressed her and said, oh mother, kindly tell me who you are and who is the one who was there and just vanished from sight now. And that is when the woman answers, I am Uma, the one who was here earlier in the guise of a Yaksha was none other than Brahmadeva himself, the creator. All of you devas were so bloated with your egos after winning the war that you thought you are invincible and your egos are inflated to such ridiculous extent that a lesson had to be taught, and that is the reason why Yaksha was there. It was Lord Brahma, who had come in the form of that Yaksha. As long as you have ego, you cannot have self-realization, or you cannot please the Lord. And that is why Brahma disappeared. You cannot see the Lord. He was there in front of you, but you could not see him because you were all covered with ego. As Indra, you personify the mind, which is the leader of the senses, and the senses are a bundle of desires. So that is the reason why I have given you a vision of myself as a woman who is the embodiment of many wishes and desires. So at least you are able to see me, but you too missed having the darshan of Brahma, because all of you are clouded with ego. And when everyone heard these words of Uma, that's when they prayed to Lord Brahma, "O Lord, we now realize how not even a blade of grass will move without your command. What to speak of the macrocosm and the macrocosm? How foolish we were. How ridiculously we were puffed up with pride about our powers." And Bhagwan says in that discourse during summer course, "What is the use of various positions and powers? You have buddhi balam, dhana balam, wealth, physical strength, intellectual acumen. If you don't realize where the source is, Bhagwan goes on to explain how every living being engaged in its pilgrimage, in this karma kshetra, in this field of action, are using this mind, the tongue, the ears, the eyes, the nose, hands, feet, etc. And these are instruments. Karanamulu, Swami says, these are instruments. To achieve success in this physical world, it is essential to have three things. Instruments, that is karanamulu. Cause or the purpose, that is karanam. And the doer, and that is karta. So to achieve anything, you need a doer, the karta. You need a purpose, karanam. And you need instruments, that is a karanams, karanamulu. So the one who uses these instruments is the doer, the karta. And the desire that propels that person to act is the cause, the karanam. And Swami says, the primary aim of every person should be to recognize the unity underlying these three factors. In common parlance, we say that the eyes see, the ears hear, and the mouth speaks. But as Bhagwan has mentioned in so many discourses, if this were to be true, then why is it that after a man's death, these very instruments, though found intact, cannot discharge their functions? When a man dies, the eyes are there, the eyes don't disappear, but the eyes cannot see. The ears are very much there, but the ears cannot hear. The mouth is there, tongue is there, but the mouth and the tongue are unable to do anything. So we know that there is an invisible divine power which imparts life and energy to all the organs. And that is the reason why when that power leaves the body, everything becomes lifeless. Swami says, this power is called prana, the life principle. So where from does this prana come? Where does it go? At whose instructions or bidding does the prana function? These are the questions that are asked in the Kenopanishad, where investigations are done about this divine energy which animates the several instruments in the body, which is inherent in the prana, in the life principle. Whether it belongs to a power superior to prana. And Swami here gives an illustration. Swami says, we see the earth. The earth is illumined by the moonlight, isn't it? All of us have experienced this. How the rays of the moon fall on the earth. But we know that the moon itself shines because of the sun. Moon is nothing but the reflected light of the sun. So where does the sun get its light from? It is the divine power that lends its luster to the sun. The hydrogen and the helium contained in the sun have originated from that divine power, which the Upanishads designate as the Brahma Tattva, the principle of the Supreme Absolute Reality. The Upanishads further declare that it is due to the effulgence of Brahman that the world shines, and that there is no effulgence in the universe which can illuminate Brahman. Everything happens because of the power of this Brahman. It is the light of Brahmans that enables the eye to see. If the eyes are able to see, it is not the power of the eyes, but it is the power of Brahman that enables the eyes to see. The mind is able to function because of the light of Brahman. And because they function because of the light of Brahman, they cannot grasp Brahman. The eyes which sees because of the power of Brahman cannot grasp Brahman. And that is the reason why Brahman is proclaimed as Yato Vacho Nivartante Aprapya Manasasaha, which means Brahman is beyond the reach of the mind and the speech. This divine power resides in every person, but man is unable to recognize it because, Swami says, it is because man develops only bahya drishti, the outward vision, and is not putting forth any effort whatsoever to cultivate and experience the antar drishti or the inner vision. And in this segment 11.3, Swami is telling the manas, buddhi, chitta, ahankara, everything has to be directed towards the inner vision. That is the way one will realize one's reality. That is the way one can move closer to understanding, experiencing this power of the Brahman. And Bhagwan in his own ways used to bring these fantastic lessons to light in the interactions that Swami used to have with the devotees, with the students. So one day, I remember this student, he had sketched a very beautiful picture and he wanted to show that drawing to Bhagwan. He's been trying it for so many days. Finally, one day, he got the chance to sit close to his throne in the Trey Brindavan in Bengaluru ashram. And as he showed that sketch to Bhagwan, Swami looked at the sketch and Swami appreciated the boy's drawing, and Swami asked, "Every Chesyaru, who did this?" And this boy hesitatingly said, "Swami, Nene Chesyanu Swami, I have done it, Swami." And Swami said, "Hey." And the boy thought, "Oh my God, something is wrong. What did I say wrong?" And he realized and he corrected himself. Said, "Swami, Swami, mere chesaru, Swami. Swami, Swami, you only have done it." And then Swami said, Mari, isn't it? And then Swami smiled and gave it back to the boy. That's when the boy said, I could have never done justice to that picture because it was a sketch on him. If he does not bless, you cannot get it right. And it was because of my prayers to him. It is because I was thinking of him doing Namasmarana and constantly praying that that sketch had come out beautifully. But at that point in time, when Swami asked, after the work was done, we want to take the credit. During the work, we are tensed and we keep praying. And that's what had happened to this boy. And Swami reminded that boy, who has done it? So if consciously every time we remember this, whenever we say, I have done it, we have to say, oh, you have to hear in our minds, in our mind that, hey, oh, Swami, and correct ourselves. No, Swami, no, Swami, you did it, you did it. And Swami said, Mari, isn't it? So I think that is an exercise that we really constantly need to do. And that is what the Keno Upanishad says, Bhagavan mentions in that discourse, that this divine power is the life of our life. It is the mind of our mind, the eye of our eye, the ear of our ear, the speech of our speech. Because it is this divine power which is the motivating, coordinating, illuminating principle underlying all the organs and everything of human personality. And Swami gives the example of a car, and Swami says, just like the headlights and the horn, the engines, the wheels of a car, they depend on the battery for their respective functions. Only if the battery is there will the car give light and the sound and propulsion, everything will happen once the car has the battery. Similarly, all the organs of our body are animated or motivated by the divine atmic power inside. Swami says, this is what enables the body to discharge its respective functions. In the Upanishads, there is this example of the light. Bhagavan also mentions this during a discourse in the Purnachandra Auditorium in 1995, 28th of February. Swami says that, look at this hall, there is a light here. And because of the light, there is someone reading under the light, someone is sleeping, someone is talking, someone is moving about. All of these things happen because of the light. But the light has no connection with all of these activities. The light is only a witness. Everything happens because of the light, but the light is untouched. Someone can be scolding someone or someone can be loving someone else, but the light is untouched. But it happens because of the light. You're able to know about it because of the light. It happens with the light as the basis, but the light is untouched, just like the sun. It is because of the sunlight that different people are able to do their various activities, but the sun is unaffected by either the good or the bad actions that are being done by different people. It is only a witness. Without the sun, nothing is possible. And that is the reason why in the Keno Upanishad, man is advised to understand this and merge the senses in the mind and then the mind in the Atma. Because that is the way you can experience the divine power inherent in the Atma-mind complex. What is happening today? Instead of merging the senses in the mind and the mind in the Atma, today people are spending their time devoting their senses and the mind in worldly pursuits, the senses are not being turned towards the mind. The senses are being turned towards the world. We are not taking steps to unite the mind with the Atma. We are taking steps which separates the mind from the Atma. And that is the reason why you're going farther and farther from realizing the Supreme Principle. Swami gives this very beautiful concept of the seer and the seen. So Swami says, let us now consider the karana, the tools, and the Atma from the standpoint of seen and the seer. So all the objects that are seen by the eyes are the seen, correct? So if I am seeing a monitor, if I am seeing a car, then the eye is the seer, because the eye is seeing, and what is seen is the car. That is what is being seen. But when the eyes are open but do not see the objects present before them because of the mind being wandering somewhere else, it happens, isn't it? Sometimes your eyes are open but your eyes are not seeing because your mind is somewhere else. Then what is happening? Someone is seeing the eyes, right? Or even when you close your eyes, or you know that someone else is seeing the eyes, so that at that time the eye becomes the seen and the mind becomes the seer. So someone that is seeing the eyes is the seer, and the eye becomes the object that is seen. Similarly, when the mind is seeing the eye, there is something that is seeing the mind. It is the buddhi that is observing the wanderings of the mind, Swami says. So in that case, the buddhi becomes the seer and the mind becomes the seen, because something is saying that my mind is wandering. So someone is seeing the mind. So the buddhi that is seeing the mind becomes the seer and the mind becomes the seen. And then comes the next stage, which is the stage of samadhi, Swami says. There, someone is seeing the buddhi. And that is the Atma. The Atma is seeing the buddhi. And so the Atma becomes the seer and the buddhi becomes the seen. But there is nobody who is seeing the Atma, because the Atma is self-effulgent. The Atma is the ultimate. The Atma is always the seer. It is never the seen. It always is the seer. It is always the witness. It's always the one which notices everything. So here Bhagavan says, if you see everything, even the mind, the senses, the buddhi, everything is the seen. But the one principle that is the seer, which notices, which watches everything, that is the Atma, which is the permanent seer. And in the absence of the Atma, nothing will work, however valuable they may be. A machine worth crores of rupees will not work if there is no power which operates it. It will become a useless mass of steel, isn't it? Similarly, without the atmic power, all the other organs will have no standing, will have no purpose. The whole body becomes a worthless mass of flesh and bones if there is no power of the Atma which powers it. Therefore, Swami says it is the foremost duty of man to realize the Atma, which imparts value to the otherwise valueless body and all these instruments, the senses. And when we understand that, then we know that the one who does everything is the true identity, and we identify ourselves with that. We become the doer when we identify ourselves with our body, with our mind, with our senses. And that is the difference between the wise and those who are otherwise. When you say, I have done it, you're identifying yourself with the body. But the wise know that it is only one power which animates everything. They identify themselves with the Atma. Swami says, yes, it is not easy. If you grow a crop of garlic by using the powder of camphor as the soil, and if you even use a fragrant variety of musk as the manure, and you use scented rose water for irrigation, whatever you do, still the produce of garlic that you get as a result of all your effort will be the natural pungent odor of the garlic. You will not get different kind of garlic. Swami was giving this example to say that, yes, it is very difficult for one to change their nature. The senses will want to look outside. The mind will wander. So, yes, it is quite a task to go on this journey. Despite, you know, all the sadhana, satsang, holy company, the vasanas, our previous tendencies accumulated in the course of our several past lives, they don't leave man so easily. And those pulls and pressures are always there. And that is the reason why Swami says it is very important to understand the true nature of oneself, to understand that the body is something very, very temporary. As Swami used to say, it is a repository of flesh, blood, and filth. That's what the body is actually. But in this body, there shines the gem of purest ray. In this body resides that Atma. There is that Atmic principle which is encased in this body. In this ephemeral body, there is the eternal principle. In Mrinmaya, as Swami says, there is Chinmaya. There is that divine principle, that principle of full consciousness. And it is this secret that man has to try to unravel. And once we make that effort, then automatically we will not associate ourselves with the body. We will not associate ourselves with the mind. And slowly that whole principle of, I am not the one who is making things happen, we will slowly live in that consciousness that there is a divine principle guiding everything and the doer is someone else. And we live in that consciousness. There was once a student who had joined Bhagwan's college in the 80s, and he was from North India. He came from a family of army officers, and he was a very well-built boy. And he was proficient in a number of sports, from boxing and cricket to basketball and horse riding. And he always shone on the field, and he took great pride in his athletic body. So during holidays and festival occasions, Bhagwan usually distributed sweets to all the students and devotees. And those were the occasions when Swami would give many students the opportunity to execute this task. He would call upon a few students to distribute these prasadams. So many times these sweets would be in big vessels, steel basins, and the boys would carry these basins to all corners of the hall. So during one occasion, just before commencing the distribution, Bhagwan called some boys. Generally, what would happen is the first three or four students with the steel basins would go to Bhagwan and seek his blessings. So one Swami blesses those first three or four containers by his divine touch, then the distribution would start. So in this particular occasion, this boy too had this opportunity to carry a basin, because he was the first third or fourth boy who was carrying the basin. So he had this chance to go near Bhagwan and get it blessed. And Swami was standing on the portico, and at that point in time he was interacting with a few students, and it so happened that when this student went near Bhagwan, exactly at that moment in the course of his conversation, Bhagwan moved a few paces in the opposite direction. And the boy stood there holding the vessel for one whole minute. But somehow Swami didn't turn his way, and Swami was engrossed in the conversation. And slowly the vessel was getting heavier for his arms. And he told himself, it's okay, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm a strong guy, I'm an athlete, I'm a sports person, so it's okay, no problem. So another minute passed, and still there was no sign of Bhagwan ending that interaction. There was no even indication of Swami turning this side. So 2 minutes have passed, and he's holding the steel vessel full of sweets, and you know, now he started sweating a little. He was fretting and sweating now a little, because the weight of the vessel was becoming now too much for him to bear. 2 minutes he's been lifting and holding that, but now there was no way he can put it down also. I mean, he thought the whole hall is watching. All the devotees are watching this happening in front of all the students and the devotees. And, you know, it looked really undignified. He thought, if he just gave up, you know, he's been holding that for 2 minutes. And also it will really hurt his ego. I mean, can he not hold that vessel? He's a young man, he's a strong guy. But Swami still not turning this side. And 3 full minutes passed now. Now his muscles stiffened. His nerves were popping out. His face became red. He was a North Indian. He was generally a white complexion. Now he became fully red. Now, you know, it was reaching a point where he was feeling, oh my God, I can't take it anymore. Like 4 minutes passed. And now his strength was really giving away. He has stretched himself to the hilt. And now he got scared, you know, I need to do something, otherwise the vessel will just slip out of my hand. And if, my God, if that happens, then, you know, it'll be such an embarrassment, you know, embarrassment. He thought that, you know, if something like that happened, there'll be nothing more disastrous than that. Like 5 agonizing minutes went by, and he had really reached the ultimate limit of his physical and mental stamina. And he had lost that tenacity and the pride in his athletic ability, you know. I can do it. All that had gone now. As the 6th minute began, you know, no other option left. He thought he might just drop it. And finally he thought, oh my God, I just really need to pray to Swami now. I don't know what is going to happen. He started praying internally. Swami, please help. Swami, please help. Please help. I mean, I surrender to you, Swami. Please help. I can't hold this anymore. And with all his body, mind and strength, he desperately started praying to Swami. And then suddenly Swami turned a little, turned slightly. And then Bhagwan looked at him, smiled gently, and gave him that all-knowing look and said, And the boy went forward, and Swami touched the vessel. And Swami signaled him, go and distribute. What a relief for this boy. And he was saying, nobody understood what was going on within me. The onlookers were probably sad that I was waiting for long, but they had no clue of the surgery that Bhagwan was doing within me. How did Swami know the exact point when I was totally going to give up? How did he react at that moment when I said, Swami, I surrender myself to you. I am nothing. My strength is nothing. I am nobody. Please help. That is Baba. That is Sai. That is how he lifts us and takes us higher in our spiritual journey. So this is what that boy shared. Only when the ego is subdued can love shine. And only when love shines can ego be eliminated. Only when the ego goes that one will give up that feeling of doership. And only when you give up that feeling of doership that you will become. And instrument perfectly fit for the divine. In May 2007, on the occasion Vishwarama Day, Swami was in Kodaikanal and Swami had planned to do a distribution. He was giving to all the little children there t-shirts, and there were so many Balvikas children, and there were devotees who had come to Sai Shruti Bhagwan's ashram in Kodaikanal for his darshan. And every year the Ishwarama Day would always be marked with Narayan Seva, and Swami would be spending that entire day serving people food and clothes and giving dresses and pencil boxes and school bags to children, and devotees would be blessed with clothes and saris and shawls and of course food. So after all this distribution was done and all the boys, they came running to Swami in their soiled clothes, you know, and in their sweaty faces. And Swami looked at them with a beaming smile, and with a twinkle in his eyes, Swami said, "You're all very fortunate." And so one of the brothers, he told Swami, "Swami, it is really the blessing of our parents and grandparents that we are here with you." Swami said, "Not just parents and grandparents, even generations before that." And then Bhagwan paused. He looked at all the boys from left to right. And then Swami said, "You are fortunate to be able to serve." Many times we think that service is the means to accumulate merit, a path to earn one's liberation, an act leading us to salvation. But Swami was saying, service is a goal in itself. We always thought service was a wonderful means to a glorious end, but never we think that service is the goal in itself. And that one statement of Swami, "You are fortunate to be able to serve," the very chance you're getting to serve, that itself is a blessing. That removed whatever little bit ego was there, smallest trace of doership was there. Because you have to only feel gratitude to Bhagavan for the chance that he has given to serve. I think when you constantly feel that, thank you Swami, you've given this chance to serve, you've given this chance to do this, you've given this chance, you've given this family, you've given this resource, you have given this opportunity, you have given this time, you have given this life, you have given this energy, it's only because of you that I'm able to breathe, talk. I think the moment more and more we think like this, the more and more we feel like this, then every act will slowly be devoid of the doership. In one very beautiful discourse in 1993, Swami says that Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara, you know, they are the three presiding deities of creation. One is responsible for creation, protection and annihilation. But Swami says, if your heart is totally pure, You don't need to go to Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. Swami says you can establish direct connection with the Supreme Lord who is above Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. You don't need to go to the departments of creation. You can go straight to the one overlord of the universe if your heart is totally pure. And Swami says, how can your heart become pure? There is only one way, and that is the way of total surrender. With total surrender, you can establish a direct link with God, heart to heart. So this Bhagwan has given us these Vedantic principles, as well as in our interactions, through the conversations, through real life examples, Bhagwan has shown us how we can reach there. Where Swami is saying here that only the difference between the jnani and the ajnani here is the jnani thinks that he is not the doer, but the ajnani is conscious that he is the doer. And if we are conscious of this distinction, then Swami says you will come out of this bondage, and the basis for everything is this I. And Bhagwan very clearly says here, seeking for that I, once you are in that I state, how many ever thoughts come and go, you will remain unaffected. Because once you identify yourself with that Atma, not with the body, not with the mind, not with the senses, that is the way to liberation. And that is how Bhagwan concludes the chapter in segment 11.3, the chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarini. So dear listeners, we did spend good amount of time understanding this deeper concept that Bhagwan has beautifully explained, unraveled for us. And all these concepts are so deep that actually one has to really try and practice them through little exercises, through our little experiments. Just listening or just reading will probably give us some intellectual understanding, but that will do us no good. Only when we take something and do our own experiments will we unravel the mystery of these concepts and experience the joy of going closer and closer to feeling the presence of the ultimate reality within. So let's do this exercise and let's help each other in this beautiful journey. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to listener@ssmediacenter.org. You can also send your feedback to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. With gratitude and love, I offer this little endeavor at His lotus feet and pray that He be with us as we go through this beautiful journey of becoming one with Thee. Thank you so much. Sairam.